And so you can get the experience of building on the technology you're going to be using within that company with no one's permission, right? And so, for example, for me, like Fedimint is like a core and integral part of Fedi. So even though I wasn't working for Fedi at the time, my work on Fedimint was a natural translation over, right? When I went to, so between, like before working at Fedi, I was working at OKCoin for a while, right? Like OKCoin, they initially hired me to work on Lightning stuff. And all the Lightning stuff that I'd been doing was like all based off open source projects, right? And so what they're doing is they're using the open source Bitcoin technology within the company. And so they want to hire people who have experience with that one. And the people who have experience with that one are the people who work on the open source projects, right? Not people who like work for other companies. Right. And so that's like a way where with nobody's permission, you can start getting experience and you can put down like, hey, I've already done the thing that you were going to hire me to do.
Welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Co. podcast, where we interview entry-level to C-level executives about working in the Bitcoin industry, learn about their interview process, what they do day-to-day at their Bitcoin job, and advice for current job seekers looking to work full-time in Bitcoin. Hope you enjoy. Hello, and welcome to the Bitcoin Talent Co. podcast. I'm your host, Eric Podwatchki. Today, I'm joined by my friend, Cody Lowe, who is the head of product and developer support at Fedi. Thanks for joining me, Cody.
Yeah, anytime, man.
Yeah, so to kick this thing off, we met a couple of years back at the Bitcoin conference, actually. And I think this is when we were both kind of starting our new careers in the Bitcoin space. So even over these last couple of years, it's fun to see how far we both come and contribute to the ecosystem. Obviously, you've contributed in a much different way than I have, providing support for developers, getting new junior developers into the Bitcoin space. And what I'm trying to do on the talent side of things is trying to bring as many people, whether they're technical or not, into the Bitcoin space. But both of us, we're here, we're working in the Bitcoin space, having a blast. So I figured I'd have you on and just catch people up on the journey, what it's been like for you breaking into this space and now leading a team for one of the most exciting Bitcoin companies I think that exists right now.
Oh yeah, thanks, man. And yeah, no, it's like been great seeing you like grow as well. Like I think that both of us kind of came in the same way, right? Where like we came from completely outside of Bitcoin. Like I had the Marine Corps background, you had the engineering background, and then the same way that we kind of joined into Bitcoin was by teaching it, right? So while we were learning ourselves, teaching other people about it, which kind of created sort of a nexus around which we kind of got a lot of touch points to different parts of Bitcoin. And so like I kind of did it on the technical side, but that was like from the very beginning, I was like, hey, I want to be on the technical side of this thing. But like, I remember with like Bitcoin EDU, right? What like you were running back, that was like kind of the same approach for it, right? Of like coming from completely outside of it and joining in. Yeah. But
trying to break in however we can, really. That's what it was.
Yeah. I mean, so maybe let's start with, I kind of walk through like sort of same story as you, but then I would go in the military after college, right? So I go to college, get a BSM finance, which like, you know, complete waste of time as you learn more about Bitcoin and Austrian economics, right? And after that, joined the Marine Corps. I was an infantry officer. And so I led infantry Marines. We did a deployment to Central Command as crisis response company. So that's like hopping on birds, going to different places around there. Like power projection for the US is that you can get a company of Marines anywhere in the world within 6 hours, right? And so like for like the police, that was us. Then after that, I come back, transition to reserves. Immediately after that, the Afghanistan withdrawal happens. And so my reserve unit gets reactivated and we start resettling Afghan refugees all across the United States as part of the pullout while we were going there. And so like between those two is when I first started getting into Bitcoin, right? So while I was on deployment, coronavirus happened. And so like, because we were like this, you know, rapid response unit, one of the issues is that because of coronavirus, you weren't allowed to like cross borders without like COVID tests and those kinds of things. So it ended up being a lot of like downtime. And so during the downtime is when I start kind of like listening to podcasts a little bit, like while you're not training and that sort of stuff, listening to podcasts, I started trying to teach myself how to code because I got interested in Bitcoin. And while I was there, you have these like 24-hour and 12-hour watches when the like TAC operations centers and stuff. And while you're there, there's like really nothing you can do because you're like limited to like the government computers and stuff. But I figured out that you could access Replit on it, which is like an online coding environment inside there. So like while I'm on these talk watches, just kind of waiting for the phone to ring, but like it doesn't ring because it's coronavirus. So I got a lot of time to like start teaching myself to code while I was there. Then when I come out, I knew that I wanted to go into Bitcoin as a coder. And part of the reason why was because like one of the differences between the Marine Corps and other branches is that we've got this kind of philosophy of like every Marine or rifleman is like, insofar as you exist in this organization, it's because there's a guy jumping in a foxhole with three dudes around him, and like you exist to support that guy, right? And so insofar as you're here in the organization, it's because you're in a support role for that dude's like fire maneuver, right? And yep. So if you're a pilot, there's like a world of difference between Marine pilots and Navy pilots, specifically around close air support. And the reason why is because Marine pilots, they go to the basic school. They take 6 months to learn how to lead infantry Marines, like on the ground. They get very familiar with how that works, versus the Navy guys don't have that same experience. So they can't draw on mm-hmm. it in the same way. So if that makes sense, right? So coming into yep. Bitcoin, I knew I wanted to go on the technical side. And so I was like, okay, I have to learn how to code. I have to like be that one. Even if I end up doing something else, like product manager or something like that or whatever, which is kind of like a natural thing that like infantry officers go into after they go to like sales and product management and stuff.
Yeah.
Right. But I was like, I want to like know how this works so that insofar as I can like support, it's supporting them from like a position of understanding what they're doing. Right. And so when I first started that, I started going to school like because I had GI Bill, and that was like not as useful as so like the first 3 months were kind of a wash of just sort of like, you know, me going to school and like pretending that I'm learning stuff. But like really the only way to like really start learning about Bitcoin is to just work in open source development. Right. Mm-hmm. So that was focus after that. And that's kind of been the focus ever since, of just like finding and working on useful projects within Bitcoin and finding like good weapon to target matches for my skill set that I can do at that given time. So initially that's like, you know, writing documentation, trying to figure out how to do unit tests, like basic Python stuff, basic JavaScript stuff. Right. But as you work on them, you meet other people, they teach you more stuff. You kind of keep going down that way. And then like in conjunction with that teaching, like first with Pomp Script, of course, and then with, Base 58 with Lisa. So yep. that's like now it's like the best protocol engineering school like within Bitcoin, right? And so mm-hmm. like I was very early with that because I was the way that I thought it is in the same way when, and I know I'm kind of going on a bunch of different tangents here, so maybe I can stop for a second, you can ask some questions and then I'll jump back in. But
yeah, I want to peel back the layers some more on breaking into just learning, teaching yourself how to code. I think that's a challenge for a lot of people. I mean, something I've been wanting to break into. I've taken a couple mm-hmm. online courses, but that's the extent I've gotten so far. So when you sat down to approach this, you said, I'm gonna learn Python and some JavaScript too. And that was over like maybe Replit. And then you found some more online communities. Where do you go once you start learning the basics of coding? What's like the very next steps a junior developer could follow in like a similar path as you to get to the Bitcoin space?
Yeah. So, sorry, I think you broke up. I think you broke off there for a sec. Okay.
Am I back?
I'm going to resume from here. So, yeah. So, the way that I approach it is kind of the same approach that I use in the Marine Corps, right? Is kind of, When I was at the basic school and when I was at infantry officer course, like one of the best decisions that I made there was being the radio operator for all of the runs that I could. Right. And so like for those unfamiliar with the military, like basic or in like military training, when you're in these officer training schools, right. So the basic school, infantry officer course, officer candidate school, that stuff. Basically what you do is you get reps of rotations of like being a platoon commander or being a squad leader. And you kind of rotate through those ones and you get evaluated every time that you're there. And when you're a squad leader or a platoon commander or something, that's something where you're like, it's a test, right? And so they're like giving you that role and they're like, hey, you have to do this. You're being evaluated on this thing. There's a specific role within the platoon that is not assigned and it's something that anybody gets to choose. And that's the radio operator. And so if you're the radio operator, you kind of tag along with the platoon commander on every single run. And so while we might do like 20 or 30 runs during a day during OCS, any of these schools, like the one that I mostly did this one, it was the basic school, you do like 20 or 30 runs during the day and everyone else who's part of the platoon is getting one rep at each of the roles. If you're the radiator operator, you're tagging along and seeing the rep of every other person as you go through it, right? And so like it's a little bit more work, but it's in a really advantageous position of that you get to see the evaluation of every single else, of the person doing what you're doing. And then you can like use that to like affect the way that you decide to do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so like, for example, one of the problems that most people do when they start coding is that they'll just pick like, oh, hey, this is like a tiny little project. I'm going to do it myself. But like, you don't know how to evaluate your own work. You're not putting it in front of users. Like you don't know whether or not it's good or not, right? Is that everything that you're doing to learn coding that isn't like putting something in front of a user that's not yourself or getting reviewed by someone more senior than you is not something that's like actually helping you. It's just kind of like, just like playing into your own ego for it, kind of. right? It's like, you're not really learning it if you do that. And so you can kind of think about the same perspective of like me going and starting work with Lisa, right? Like she's like core Lightning maintainer, unbelievable engineer, like absolute like wizard, like when it comes to coding, right? And so while like most of the stuff that I was doing with her when I first started working with her was like documentation, curriculum, like that sort of stuff or whatever, right? It was also getting a couple hours a week coding with her and getting my code evaluated by her, right? Hmm. And so that's just something where when you start working in open source, that's something that everyone is available and open to, is that open source contributors and maintainers always have more ideas than like time that they can put into stuff, right? So for specifically with Fediment, I probably got like 20 or 30 different ideas of stuff that I want to work on, but don't have time to, but like need to like farm out to people. That's something where it's like, I don't have time to do all the implementation myself, but I know sort of what it looks like. And so you can take a stab at the implementation as like a junior dev or something like that. And then if you come back to me with it, then I can like give you tips, give you those things or whatever. And that's the way that you learn for it. And you can start actively contributing to within Bitcoin and kind of building up a portfolio of stuff as you're doing there. Right. Yeah. So kind of putting yourself in a position where you can like see good code and you can see good work. Right. In the same way mm-hmm. that like when I was talking about like the infantry stuff, right, is that like while I would only get the opportunity if you're like selected to be the platoon commander or whatever, like during infantry officer course, you get like two roles as platoon commander during the entire 3-month course, right? Because they have to rotate through so many people. But if you're the radio operator, you get to see every single one of those runs, right? In the same way, if you're like going to dev calls and you're going to like open source contribution meetings and stuff like that, it's like, yeah, you're not writing every single line of code for it, but you get to see people who are really, really good at it and want mm-hmm. to help you. Right. And you get more reps as you're doing it. Right. Because those are the reps that count. It's not just like me writing code myself and doing 100 days of code or something like that. It's like putting something in front of a user and getting told like, no, you don't get to just like, you know, like throw away the UI just because you don't like it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really good advice. I think that applies to other areas of life, but especially with learning how to code too. Yeah. You need that feedback from outside influences telling you if you're on the right path or not, or if you're going to be working in a silo, I don't think you're going to be making too much progress. So great advice there.
Hey guys, real quick, as a Bitcoin focused recruiting firm, our goal at Bitcoin Talent Co. is to bring as many professionals into the Bitcoin industry as possible. Since we don't run ads, our one ask is to rate, review, and share this podcast with friends and family so more people can find this show. Thanks. And now back to the interview.
I want to talk more about, you mentioned Pomp's crypto course, being a coach with them, which is more on learning, I guess, the economic side of Bitcoin. And also you were helping out with Lisa, Base58, and that's same kind of idea. How do we teach people more on the technical aspects of Bitcoin? So you've kind of been an instructor coach on non-technical and technical side. Walk me through what it was like for you joining initially Pomp's crypto course, and then, yeah, how do you learn the economic side, and then how did you switch over to go teach the technical side of things?
Yeah, I mean, the economic side is just sort of, you just listen to all the podcasts, right? I mean, like, you know, there's a bunch of material out there and just kind of just go through everything Stefan Lavera puts out and like, you're good to go, right? And if you want to go on the technical side, go put everything that Bitcoin Review from NBK puts out, right? But for specifically when I first joined Pomp's crypto course was that I was not like a good coder at that point. I had like barely started, but I had a little bit more than everyone else. So I kind of positioned myself as like the person who was most interested in doing that, right? Mm-hmm. So within Pomp's crypto course specifically, none of them were technical. And so on a relative basis, I was the most technical. So then I could kind of just take on these opportunities and be like, hey, I'll do the technical stuff or whatever, right? And like, I was learning stuff while I was doing it, right? But you just kind of like put yourself in a position that you like get to, you know, do like the long hours of like figuring this stuff out on the fly, right? Like, I remember like a very specific one where I was teaching how to set up an Umbral and all that kind of stuff. And I couldn't understand why my address kept changing, right? This was like how early I was at that point. I couldn't understand why my address kept changing every time I like did a payment or whatever. It's like, oh yeah, because it's an XPOP, right? And so it's like rotating to a new address and stuff. I didn't understand how that worked initially, right? But that was like, at that point, I'd still like gotten it. And like, you know, I was getting paid a little bit of money, right? But it was just like something where every week for a couple hours each week, I got to focus on Bitcoin. I got to like get paid for it. And I got to see like reactions from students and like get feedback from that one as I'm doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And so just kind of putting yourself in positions for doing that is like, there's really nothing that beats that. And
one of the ways, a great lesson, by the way. I don't think enough people are doing that. I think too many people are lurking on Twitter or wherever else, and like they want to get involved, but they're not immersing themselves in that environment to actually do like to learn and get that feedback.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And like, that's kind of just the thing to keep in mind, right? Is that like the things that you're doing that is not like getting evaluated by someone more senior than you or getting you feedback from a user. Like if you're not doing those things, then generally speaking, it's like not going to be as productive, right? Just because you don't have that feedback cycle for it. right? I mean, like the fastest and most effective way to kind of like learn to be a better coder for these things is to just like put up PRs on open source repos and get that the maintainers, because they're frustrated that you're like not good enough, right? But they'll normally correct it as you're going through. And like for example, with Infediment, like we have like hours each week where we like go over like code review, we do deep dives and stuff like that, right? And so like all we're doing is trying to like upskill our developers and like make them better. And if you come to Infediment, if you come to Core Lightning, like any of these open source repos, then like the maintainers are always looking for people that they can farm out work to. Right. And like, if you can get farmed something and like, even if it's like not good your first time or so, like, you know, you just get, keep showing up for these things. Right. Like I was like, before doing my first contribution to Fedimint, like I probably was attending Fedimint dev calls and stuff for like a month. Right. And then like, at that point I kind of learned enough Rust that I could kind of do something, but then I still wasn't like very comfortable with Rust. And so instead of that, you kind of focus on like other aspects of the code base that you get like more of a grasp around and stuff like that. And like, there was another one, right, where like I wanted to be more of a Fedimint contributor, but there was like a stack of white papers that like I hadn't, like I knew I had to like go through. And so I was like, okay, instead of me going through these solo, I'm going to run like White Paper Wednesdays. And White Paper Wednesdays, where we get all the Fedimint contributors together, I do like a little presentation on the white paper and like hopefully everyone's read it before. But then while I'm doing the presentation, I'm getting like corrected by the maintainers of Fedimint, right? And so they're like, yeah, well, this is kind of right, but not exactly how we use it within the repo and all these sorts of things, right? And it's like, okay, that's a much better and faster feedback mechanism for like onboarding to a new project, right?
Right. And now you're, so now we're diving into Fedimint and Fedi as well. I think it'd be good to take a step back and just maybe give an overview for the audience. What's the difference between the two? And what exactly are you guys looking to tackle with both the protocol and the business?
Yeah, sure. So Fedimint is open source protocol of, it's basically a way of building federated Charmian eCash mints, right? But it's also a modular system that you can extend by attaching other modules. So for example, when you like Fedimint out of the box comes with three default modules, which is on-chain Bitcoin, Lightning compatibility, and the mint, right? And so the way to think about it is that Fedimint is basically operates like a community bank where you have a federation of trusted custodians who are like actually doing like threshold signing, right? So they call it like a 3 of 4 or 5 of 7 or something like that, right? And people deposit into the bank and they're issued claims against those deposits. And the way that we're doing this depositing mechanism is using Charmian eCash, which is a way to achieve cryptographically perfect privacy, right? And so the issue with this, and this, so Charmian eCash was invented in like, you know, call it like the 1970s, 1980s or so, right? But the issue with this is that now you just have claims that only work at your single mint, right? And so this isn't very useful and scalable at that point. But what we work on is that Fedimint has a Lightning gateway. And so you can basically use Lightning service providers, swap your notes with them, and they will complete Lightning transactions on the other side, right? And so that's kind of the infrastructure for it, is that there's on-chain deposits, which are issued eCash notes against, and then you can exchange those on-cash eCash notes within your federation, just like by doing swaps with the eCash notes. You can do like even do online offline payments, for example, right? So you can do an offline payment of, I transmit the eCash note to you, you do a redemption of the eCash note, right? And so even though I wasn't connected to the mint, I just paste the string over to you, or I can do an animated QR code or something like that, right? And then and then communicate it to you, and you can do the redemption. So this works, for example, in like really like bad bandwidth communities where it's like, hey, the storefront might have reliable Wi-Fi, but the dude coming up to the storefront might not, right? And so this use case of, even though I'm offline, I can still pay for everything because the shop owner, like he has Wi-Fi, right? Like that works really, really well in a lot of these communities, right? And so within Fedimint, so that's kind of the way that that works. It's a scaling solution for Bitcoin, right? Because this is a way that you can basically have pooled ownership of UTXOs, right? Because they're getting deposited into the central institution, maximally decentralized based off of the federation.
It's still centralized, right? In a way.
Yeah. Well, it's the way to think about it, right, is that currently there's no model to scale UTXO ownership, right? The best that we can have is just a threshold custody over that one, right? And so you can have multiple people who own this based off their notes against it, but the underlying is controlled by a custodian, right? And the custodian is this threshold federation, right? So it's like 3 of 4 or 5 of 7, 7 of 10 or whatever. Right. And so, but what's nice about these, is you can kind of spin these up, and as they get bigger, right, and you get kind of like further away from the guardian and the trust assumption starts to break down, you just break it off and make your own like other federation for it. Right. And so why is this really important? One of them is, like, as everyone's kind of figured out over the last couple of months, is that like we need scaling solutions for Bitcoin that allowed pooled ownership of a UTXO. Right. It's like everyone is not going to have their own UTXO. You have to have some mechanisms for doing that. And so with no changes to Bitcoin today, federated models look like the best scaling solution for this one. And like, if you have the privacy aspect of eCash along with it, right? It's a mm-hmm. a good way that we think the set of trade-offs is very good, right? And so that's like one aspect of it. And then the other aspect of it is, sorry, I just lost my train of thought there. Sorry about that.
let's go over to Fetty now. Okay, so how does Fetty, right? The business involve the protocol?
Yeah. So Fetty Mint is like the protocol for this one, right? It's like open to anyone. Anyone can use it. Like within Fetty Mint development, we've been helping like some other companies who are onboarding as well. Like Mutiny launched this last week, right? And so Fetty mm-hmm. is a company building on top of Fetty Mint in order to make you can kind of think about it as like a super app with like focus on privacy and communities. Right. And so you can join many, many of these different federations and manage your life, your data, and your money across all of these federations and kind of like one unified interface. Right. And so within Fetty, it mm-hmm. just makes it very seamless for managing all across these different federations, because you might have one for like your family, your local community, your town, your state, your company, or whatever. Right. And it becomes very difficult for like managing across all of these things. But for example, like you want to have like, I don't know, auto movement of funds, like to things that are closer to you, where you know the custodians more, when you get paid on those things, it becomes very easy with doing that within Fetty. And then Fetty also has, like, for example, it's like a chat mm-hmm. interface for it. And so kind of bringing payments into chat makes like all sorts of useful stuff you can do there. We've got this concept of Fetty mods, which is a way that you can basically inject Noster, Lightning, and eCash through an in-app browser within Fetty. And so you can do like native payments through eCash and Lightning through the browser inside of there. It's just like a very useful platform That's for really interacting cool. across all these different mm-hmm. federations. And it, like the thesis of Fetty is that as we kind of decentralize out and a bunch of these different communities to start adopting Bitcoin, is that the model they're going to be doing it within is like operating within these Fetty Mints, or maybe they set up like Galloway and like other things like that, right? But you need sort of a unified interface for managing across many different locations, right? Because I'm sure everyone's kind of run into this issue of like, I've got these 17 different Bitcoin apps, right? Like I've got a little bit in each one of these things, right?
Right. And aside from Fetty, are there any other businesses currently building on the Fetty Mint protocol? You mentioned Mutiny is starting to make some integration down too.
Mutiny just launched support last week. And I think that the big thing, and so this is like some alpha for you guys, is that the big thing for this that Fetty Mint specifically helps with is Lightning addresses, right? And so for those of you familiar with the way Lightning addresses work, normally the way Lightning addresses work is that you have like a Lightning address server. And that server has like a centralized, it's like, hey, you pay the server and then it like debits your account, right? Like Wallet of Satoshi or Albi or Zebedee or any of these guys, right? And like that model of having that sort of centralized version, the interface that everyone wants is they want to be able to send money to a Lightning address, right? But you've got a couple problems with this one, right? So one of them is that because you always have to be online in order to connect that, the incentive is for people to move to these custodial models. Right. And so that's why you see like most zaps and stuff that go over Noster, they end up using like custodians like that. And there's been like Albi, Wallet of Satoshi, Zebedee, those guys. Right. Just recently, Zeus launched something called a Zap Locker. Right. And so that's basically a way to do a self-custodied Lightning address payment. But the problem with that is that what it does is basically does a HODL mm-hmm. invoice. And so the Lightning side gets held up until the user eventually opens their application, right? And so what you're doing there is for every hop along the route, you're locking up that liquidity, right? Until the user ends up doing it. And this caused all sorts of problems without the Lightning network. Like even Mutiny, they had to basically like stop opening channels when like paying these HODL invoices, right? Because they were like, hey, like these things, they just clog up the network. They clog up our channels. Like we can't do this stuff, right? It's not good. So specifically with Fetty Mint, this is something that like I've been working on recently, is that you can basically do a like maximally like trustless version of this custodial Lightning address model, where basically you pay to a federation and the federation receives via Lightning gateway. And because it's receiving by the Lightning gateway, it immediately settles on the Lightning side, but it issues eCash locked to the user's pub key. And so now the Lightning address server, it isn't receiving the eCash, right? What it's doing is it's providing an invoice locked to that user. And then that user, they can scan just the way they normally reconnect to their federation, and they will pick up that locked eCash, right? And so this is a way that you can have a Lightning address server that uses Fetty Mint so that people can receive async Lightning address payments in a maximally trustless way, right? So like kind of technical for going on these ones, but I think this is like specifically this use case is going to be extremely popular with a lot of different people because everyone likes Lightning addresses. Everyone kind of is recognizing that Lightning is going to be in this sort of custodial model or that there's going to be hubs, and those hubs are going to like have Lightning accounts for many different users. This is a way you can maximally sort of like minimize that trust and also make it so people can use eCash on top of it, right? So they get good privacy.
Yeah, I was able to follow along. So hopefully some listeners as well that are less technical as me can as well. That was great. For example, yeah, thanks for the overview of that. To, yeah, I can see how there's more companies now.
Yeah, to go back to sort of like onboarding for this one, this is a project that I've sort of been working on solo and I would love to have some help with. And most of the help that I'd like to have with it is around people like testing it, using it, actually giving feedback for it, like doing PRs that like improve the documentation and those kinds of things. Like the stuff that I really need help with on that project is not like the actual implementation of it. Like I can mostly work on that, right? But if other people want to help with it, that's like an open project that I would love to get more contributors with. And that's the sort of thing where when you find someone working on a project, like they don't have a lot of other people working with them on it and you're interested in working on it. And they're like, hey, I can like off the top of my head, give you 5 or 6 different things or like an hour each based on your skill level. Right. And just like, you know, now you have stuff that you can work on. Now you're contributed to an open source project and you start kind of moving in that direction. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's very practical. So anyone listening right now, go ahead and hit up Cody. He'll get you in the right position there to get started. I want to continue through the rest of your journey now, because I think it's going to be valuable for others to hear how you transitioned from, you know, first teaching yourself how to code, starting to get feedback from other developers in the community. You're helping out with these different organizations, Space 58, you're helping out Palm Script, of course. How does Cody go from that now to working with Fetty? Tell me that story.
So Fetty grew out of my work.
I'm assuming that you started contributing to some open source projects
and Fetty Mint, working on the open source protocol.
The business started
the
forming.
Implementation.
They already knew the
and
guy to
Fetty
reach out to
is a company
for
building on top of Fetty Mint.
But yeah, let the audience know how you went in transition from
trying to build on top of one
contributor to actually getting paid.
What they try to do is they try to hire people out of the open source project, right? And so that's a way where it's kind of like a like one of the interesting ways to think about it, right? Is that you like people talk about like, oh hey, like I'm trying to hire like I work for this company, and they say like, oh, you need experience having done this work already. Right. And it's like, okay, well, that's why I was trying to go work for the company. Right. And so what's nice about it is that for a lot of these Bitcoin companies is that when they first spin up, they're all building on top of open source stacks. Right. And so you can get the experience of building on the technology you're going to be using within that company with no one's permission. Right. And so, for example, for me, like Fetty Mint is like a core and integral part of Fetty. So even though I wasn't working for Fetty at the time, my work on Fetty Mint was a natural translation over. Right. When I went to, before working at Fetty, I was working at OKCoin for a while. Right. Like OKCoin, they initially hired me to work on Lightning stuff. And all the Lightning stuff that I'd been doing was like all based off open source projects. Right. And so what they're doing is they're using the open source Bitcoin technology within the company. And so they want to hire people who have experience with that one. And the people who have experience with that one are the people who work on the open source projects. Right. Not people who like work for other companies.
Right.
And so that's like a way where, with nobody's permission, you can start getting experience and you can put down like, hey, I've already done the thing that you were going to hire me to do. Right.
Yeah, that's spot on advice right there. So tell me with Fetty exactly, how did that work for you? So I'm assuming, you're working on Fetty, man. Sure. So they see that, you're helping out.
Yeah, that process was what's really nice about Fetty is that like they move very quickly, right? And so that was actually like a 1 week period between when I decided that I was leaving OKCoin and Justin basically heard from he's one of the maintainers of Fetty Mint and co-founder of Fetty. He heard that I was leaving OKCoin. It was like, hey, Cody's on the market. And so then like over the course of a weekend, I had like 7 interviews. And then on Monday they were like, you know, offer, right? So it was a little different, right? But it's also like the reason why those things went so fast was because I'd already been working with Justin for like 1.5 years, right, through the open source project, right? And everybody within Fetty basically knew me just based off of my having worked on that, right? And so like it's very easy, like for example, for all of these companies that are, you know, like for example, like I know Fidelity just did a big hire recently, right? And like basically the way that they did it was just by selecting off of the open source projects they're now implementing within Fidelity for using their custody systems, right? And it's just like, you know, all the people who could, they're selecting for, none of them had to like get a position or anything like that. They just kind of like started doing the work beforehand. And then eventually it comes along and like, you know, Bitcoin decides to move. And then Fidelity's like, hey, now we have to hire a bunch of Bitcoin people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So there's almost also like a timing of the market as well. Like, where are these companies at? And it seems like there's going to be a huge need very soon for a lot more Bitcoin developers. So I think this is probably the perfect time to start getting involved, because these positions are going to be opening up like wildfire very soon. I want to talk a little bit more now about Fetty, the company. How many employees are currently with Fetty?
I think we're like 20-ish or like 40. I don't know. It depends on how you define it, but I don't know. I mean, like the engineering team that I work on is like, you know, it's like 10 or so. Right.
Got it. Okay. And are you guys strictly hiring Bitcoiners at the moment, or is this a team of dispersed?
Yeah. So the way anyone can join. Yeah. The way you kind of think about it, right, is that there's a bunch of prerequisites around doing it, and it's all stuff that you just sort of need a couple hours beforehand. Like, you shouldn't be showing up for an interview with Fedi and not be familiar with Fedi Mint, right? And like how it fits within the broader ecosystem, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think that they're
kind of self-selecting Canada Pool. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, for example, like the engineers, right? Like, most of us just come out of Fedi Mint, right? As like, we've hired a couple of people outside of there, but it's like, you know, because most of it's like, hey, we're building on specifically this implementation of this protocol, and like, these are the people who know how to do it, right? And so that's sort of where like most of it comes from. But the other way to think about it is that, like, tangential to that, like, regardless of what like you end up working on, right? Like, you're going to have to interact with Lightning. You're going to have to interact with on-chain, right? So there's like some people who we hired who like, they weren't familiar with Fedi Mint before, but they were like much bigger, like Lightning guys. Right. And then there's also just like, you know, like natural UI design and all those kinds of things. Right. And so those guys didn't come out of Fedi Mint. But for most of it is like, hey, if you've got a company building specifically on this open source stack, then you just start contributing to the open source stack. And then every once in a while, like when they have a job posting or whatever, like the easiest place to select out of is the people who've like already been doing it for the last 6 months. Right. And so that's kind of the way to think about it.
Right. What's it like for you working with other Bitcoiners day to day compared to maybe other jobs you've held in the past? Any big differences you can point out?
No, I mean, like, one of the common ones was like kind of having like a mission and purpose, right? So it's like you sort of know why you're there and why it's important. And so like while I was bleeding Marines, like that was something where you kind of get that every day of like, hey, I know what I'm supposed to do here, right? Mm-hmm. And like everyone is sort of aligned on the same mission that we're going towards. And within Fedi, right, there's like a very strong focus on Bitcoin as a mechanism to empower disempowered communities. And so like every day, even though you're working on like some technical stuff or whatever, right? Like it's always done in this context of like the people we are building this for are the people who need it most, right? And so that's something I think is a little bit different of like Fedi specifically versus some of these like these other companies that are primarily focused on like, you know, like financial institutions in the United States and Europe, right?
Lost you for a second there, but yeah, I got the gist of it. Yeah, I know. That's how I felt too when I came to the Bitcoin space. Everyone's kind of here for a reason, and it's something way beyond just collecting a paycheck. And that energy is contagious too. I want to talk about now, I guess, switching over to putting your hiring hat on. First, what's it like? What's the interview process like at Fedi? How many rounds of interviews do you guys usually have in your hiring process? And yeah, what's it like for people that apply?
Yeah, we're still small, so it's like mostly you just kind of meet everyone, right? And so like when I joined, I kind of knew everyone already, right? We hire some new guys, like they first do like, you know, technical rounds or whatever it is for their specific skill set for it. And there's also just sort of like, hey, they'll meet someone with someone at a different part of the company. And it's just like, like, you know, do you kind of like hit the normal wickets, right? Of like, do you understand Fedi Mint? Like, do you understand Bitcoin? Are you interested in this stuff? Is your focus on these sort of community related things instead of sort of like, you know, number go up or whatever, right? I think it's kind of just like, as you go through, it's just like everyone sort of has to give the head nod for it, right? And I think it's sort of kind of a group consensus thing, because it's like, just because we're such a small company and so focused on Fedi Mint, right? It's like everyone kind of knows everyone else, right? And so for that one, it's like, what's nice about it is that it's very easy to like come in and start working on it, right? And so like once you're there, you're doing it. But basically, like, I think at the point where it is right now, just because we're so focused on specifically Fedi Mint, right, that it's pretty focused on that. So like, for example, my technical interviews, right, were mostly, it was like, hey, reviewing code that I'd written for Fedi Mint previously, right? And so it's like, you know, the whole like, oh, do this coding exercise or something like that, right? It's like, oh, I've been working on this project for like a year and a half, right? Like, I've been working next to these people for a long time. So they kind of like know what the abilities are, right? And so same thing for new people coming in, right? But like, you know, I mean, you should always prep for like the code stuff. Generally, the best way to prep for code stuff is to just have like a GitHub graph of just like green every day, and you have open source projects and they have good readmes and like they're like easy to develop set up the development environment for, so that before the interview, I can like download some of your code, play around with it, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah, that's great advice. And now, do you have, as a hiring manager, do you have a specific question that you like to ask people during interviews to gauge if they're going to be a good fit for the role and for the business?
Yeah, so this is something that I shamelessly stole from Officer Candidate School. And the way that we do this is basically there's like two sort of evaluations that you have during Officer Candidate School of like your leadership ability, right? And leadership is just sort of like a do the right thing at the right time for the right reasons. And so like you can, that's sort of a abstract skill that you can basically apply everywhere, right? And it works really well when you're working within a remote company, right? Of that you kind of want to assess someone's ability to continue working on a problem, even though they're stuck and like, you know, do they ask for help, those sorts of things, right? And so for Officer Candidate School, they call it small unit leadership evaluations. And what they do is they kind of throw you into the situation and give you a impossible task. And then they're like, okay, time starts now, right? Like do this thing, right? And it's like, I don't know, like you've got a bunch of stuff in front of you. You have to get it over this wall through this little obstacle course thing or whatever. It's you and three other people. And they're like, hey, move all this stuff over, right? And they don't tell you this beforehand, right? But like the tasks are impossible. Like you can't actually do them, right? It's like, but the thing that they're evaluating for is like, do you give up, right? Are you making incremental improvements to your strategy as you do it? Are you beta testing? Are you trying different things, right? Like, are you using your people that you have with you effectively, right? Of that, like, hey, I'm focused on this thing and trying to figure out what the next steps are, but I've got these two other guys who are continuing to work on this way, right? And they're like making sure that I'm getting reports back from them, that sort of stuff. So anything where you can kind of structure a problem like that one, where you give someone something you know they're not going to be able to do in that time, but you can really evaluate for the approach of like, hey, am I incrementally making improvements for this stuff? Am I slamming my head against this thing over and over again, or am I not responding to feedback when it's not working? Or is it, I try something, I learn from it, I try something else. Yeah. And what's most important is that you don't know what the deadline is. And so they just continue doing it. And generally you just kind of keep letting them do it until you sort of get the idea, right? Of like, hey, this guy's not going to give up on this thing and he's making incremental improvement for it, right? And that's extremely important within like Bitcoin and remote world stuff, because you know, like you're not going to have like someone next to you all the time, right? Who you can just sort of tap on the shoulder and be like, hey, like what's the answer for this thing, right? It's like, you need to be able to incrementally go on these problems. But if you encounter something and kind of like get stuck somewhere, right? Like one of the like really good things that someone did in an interview with me was like, they were like, hey, they did this stuff. They asked me some questions, which would inform the way that they would continue approaching on that one. And while I was like typing up some answers to their questions, they started on some other aspect of it, right? And so just sort of that approach of like being able to like attack a problem from multiple different angles and just continue attacking on it is like, you can do that through code, you can do that through like exercises, you can do that through whatever, but that's a trainable skill, right? And it's also something that it's kind of difficult to train. And so it's very nice to identify that someone has it beforehand, right?
Yeah, I love that. I've heard something similar, but I will definitely be using that moving forward here with our recruiting processes too. I want to go back to some more actionable advice, I think, for junior developers looking at getting the space here, plus upcoming opportunities, I think, throughout 2024 at Fetty and related. I guess start with that. Is there anything on the top of your mind, any open positions that will be coming up in the new year here?
Yeah, so I can, not specific positions at Fetty, but I can talk about kind of sort of like general approach to working within Bitcoin from a technical perspective, right? And it's kind of like, even if it was to work specifically at Fetty, you would be doing these same actions, even if you were going to work someone else, right? So just like off the top of my head is like just in the last couple of weeks, I made a Fediment HTTP client that can make wrappers in different languages. So it's like a simplified way of interacting with the Fediment client using like, you know, I made one in TypeScript, Elixir, like Go, all these sorts of things. I'm not experts in those languages, right? I just wanted to make something that people could kind of play around with Fediment pool. And so I'm looking for help for all of those things. And those are super easy projects that get you experience of working with Fediment, working with Lightning. And it's like a very like easy project to sort of take up and start rolling with, right? Like if you wanted to like eventually become a maintainer of it or whatever, right? Like totally cool with that, right? So I can focus on like more like Fediment Rust side, right? But those specific projects, that's like five or six different people I could probably manage across those ones of giving them like significant open source experience over the next couple of months, right? So then just generally speaking within Fediment, we have weekly dev calls on Mondays where we go over PRs. And so we like assign PRs to different people, we assign different issues to different people. And that's a really good place to get started with getting some like oversight from senior members, right? And so that's something you can get review from like really, really good senior devs within Bitcoin, right? Then we also have on Thursdays, we do deep dives where we go and sort of just like question and answers period of going through some more technical part of Fedimint. And so that's, you know, we could be going deep on the wallet, deep on like how some of the cryptography works. This next week, we're probably going to do like the upgrade path for going from Fedimint 0.1 to 0.2. Right. And so all of these are like really good experiences that you can kind of just participate in regardless of your skill level. And we kind of match it to the point that you're at. And this starts getting you like, you know, green on your GitHub graph, getting you some like coding experience and getting you reviewed by more senior guys. Right. So that's like one element of it. And then the other element of it is going through Base58 or BTC++. Like specifically, if you can go to BTC++ Austin, like that is the place to go. It's like Bitcoin Mecca for technical guys, right? And that's like the best conference there. Like that's where I initially got introduced to Fedimint, right? Like that was, I worked with Justin on, we called it a Simpimint, which was like a simplicity contracting system within Fedimint, right? And going to those just because Lisa just does an unbelievable job with teaching protocol development. And then off of that, you can do sort of specializations within a specific implementation and all that kind of thing, right? So any of those would be really good opportunities for it. But just generally speaking is like you need to be writing code and that code needs to be reviewed by someone more senior than you so they can tell you what you're doing wrong and give you recommendations for improvement, not something that you just do on your own. And then also like potentially putting stuff in front of users and getting feedback in that way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, tons of actual advice there. If you can go in person, Base 58, I've heard very great things about that. Sign up, get in tune with Lisa, get in tune with Cody. So they do both online and in person.
Yeah. So there's online, there's in person for the hackathons, and
Perfect. All right. Cool. Yeah. So we, as we last couple of minutes here, as we wrap up our talk today, I wanted to kind of talk about the future of Bitcoin, how you're thinking about it. Obviously, today's a very important day. We're recording on the day that these Bitcoin ETFs, I think, got approved. About to get approved, which means Wall Street's now getting in on Bitcoin. I'd say over this next halving, Cody, what are you looking forward to just in the Bitcoin space in general? What are you most excited about?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm biased, right, toward being excited about Fedimint because we've been working for a very long time on this. And now it's 0.2. It's like ready for production use, right? And so we've got people
Fedimint look like? What does that look like in like this time next halving, 4 years?
Yeah, I think you're going to have federations of all different solution sizes set up all across the world. And there's going to be very different reasons why people are doing it, right? And so just generally speaking, like Fedimint as a scaling solution hits adoption. Because now we're getting to the point where a UTXO for every person is not working. And then hopefully we can improve that with CTV and like other softworks and stuff, right? But for now, just given the limitations that we currently have on Bitcoin, I think Fedimint is the best set of trade-offs for doing that. And so as you scale Bitcoin, you have to be able to scale it to multiple people. Multiple people have to be able to own a UTXO. The best way to do that is with a threshold custody mechanism, right? And so just generally speaking too, right, is that like, I mean, I know we always talk about like not your keys, not your coins, right? But sort of just walking through like the necessity of using something like Fedimint is that like the gold standard or Bitcoin standard or whatever for self-custody is a threshold or a multi-sig backup mechanism for your cold storage, right? So you yourself don't hold all of the keys, right? You're split across multiple different people. But you can think about this as every single person who tries to take self-custody is supposed to do that now, right? And so one of the benefits of Fedimint is that it gives you a natural mechanism for doing encrypted threshold backups across your federation, right? So like I hold one of my keys and then I take a remainder of the keys and then I threshold encrypt them to the federation. And so they can decrypt to give me back their side, right? And so now I have that backup mechanism, right? But I'm also relying on them, generally speaking, to not collude in order to do those things, right? So it's the same custody model that's sort of for doing like the Bitcoin standard of custody, which is the threshold backup mechanism, right? But it makes it instantly and easily scalable for anybody to use it, right? Because you think about how difficult it is. Like, you know, I've tried like setting up with my wife, right? And she's like not interested in this stuff. She's like not interested in key management. She's like not, doesn't really get it at all or whatever, right? But like what's nice is that you have trusted community guardians who you trust anyway, because you're like close and part of your community, who can be more technical, who can be able to do this thing. And just because like they're a trusted member of the community, they're naturally going to end up being the like backup, one of the like multi-sig backup holders. This is a way to formalize that process. But then on top of it, you get really good privacy, right? Because one of the issues is that if you have a multi-sig and you give it to someone else, right? If they know your XPUB, they can see all of your transactions, right? So like, for example, when you end up doing a recovery at the very end, like, I don't know, you died or something and your wife goes and does a recovery, they can see all of your transactions, right? When you do a recovery with Fedimint, all you get is the new, is the unspent eCash tokens that you still have there that you can do a redemption against as the mint, right? And so all of your prior payments are private.
Right.
And when you're talking about a closed community context, it's very important that you have a baseline of privacy for going into these things, right?
So what I'm thinking about this is inheritance overall is going to be completely changed.
I don't know about completely changed. I just think that there's a lot of people who don't know how to do key management properly, and they need better solutions in order to do it. And Fedimint is a good out of the box solution for improved threshold key management. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think that's also one of the reasons why a lot of people are driven to these custodial solutions, right? Because it's like, hey, I don't trust myself necessarily just because I'm non-technical. I'm not good at managing my keys. I don't know how to do all the multisig stuff, right? And like backing up the like original multisig file, for example, even, right? And the original descriptor file, right? And with this, you get an out-of-the-box solution. So for example, when you first join a federation, right? Like you automatically do an encrypted backup against that federation if you want to. You can do it, we call it social backup, right? And so anybody who ends up joining the Federation, they can immediately opt into this like threshold multisig solution. And then currently there's like some pre-configurations for it, but eventually you could configure it with like, hey, I'm comfortable with this amount. I want to have it be like a 3 of 5 recovery or something. And I keep 3 of the keys. I keep another 3 of the keys, the other 2 keys within the Federation, or you could leave all the keys in the Federation, but they're encrypted. And so you're the same security assumption that they're not going to rug you is that like, they're also not going to like specifically decrypt your thing. Your file that you left with them or whatever, but you can only give them like, you know, like 2 of the 5 keys or something, right? And you keep the remaining keys. And so they never have everything just in order to like specifically identify you, but you at any point can like go back to them, get the missing keys and that sort of thing, right? It just becomes a very robust solution for a lot more people, right? Because currently, I don't know, like if you have experience with people, but like they kind of don't trust themselves to do like multisig custody just because it's like a little difficult. It's getting better, right? But I think Fedimint is like a better solution for that one because, you know, hey, you do all this multisig custody and you put all your tiny little UTXOs there and then the fees go up and now those UTXOs are uneconomical, right? And so this is a way that you can have threshold custody over shared UTXOs with very good privacy out of the box, and it's something scalable to millions of people, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess over these next 4 years, we're going to see how this kind of plays out.
Yeah, no, it's exciting.
yeah, I think the connections get a little shaky here, so I think we'll call it. But Cody, thank you so much for your time today. I learned a ton, and I'm sure a lot of the listeners will be taking you up on your advice on how to get started in the Bitcoin space as a technical developer. So tell listeners, how can they get in contact with you and learn more about Fedi and Fedimint?
Yep. So I'm on Nosser on Twitter, and the Fedimint developer Discord is really good. We have like a bunch of educational material stuff in there, and we schedule all our calls through there. And then just specifically is that we've got a couple open projects now within Fedimint where it's like, hey, we need more people to work on these things just because like we're like core contributors focused on other stuff right now. Would be really nice and like improvements for user experience and all those kinds of things. We were able to do that. So the specific one is that if you have experience in any language that isn't Rust, right, is that I built out a Fedimint HTTP server that allows you to interact with it over just like a normal REST API. And so that's like a very good starter project for anybody who wants to like sort of get into using Bitcoin, using Fedimint, using Lightning, right? Because it's kind of like choose your own language and you're just basically doing a super simple REST API, right? And then also like potentially upgrading with WebSockets and all that kind of stuff. But like that's something you can like learn and I can teach you as you sort of work on it, right? It's just, there's a ton of projects within Bitcoin where we just need bodies, right? And like everyone's more than willing to help within there, but it's just like, hey, if we like give you something to do, then like, you know, just making sure that like you're actually following up on those things, trying to learn and all that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. There's a path forward for all the listeners here. Thank you so much for your time, Cody. Maybe we'll have you on in a couple of years from now. We'll see where the progress is with Fedi and Fedimint. And just looking forward to that in the future of Bitcoin.
Sure. Awesome. Thanks, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. And I really hope you found value in this podcast. If you're a job seeker looking to work for a Bitcoin company, or you're a part of a Bitcoin company and need help with finding talent for your team, please head over to our website at www.bitcointalent.co and get in touch with our team. Thanks. Until next time.